We want the truth, so watch Truth Wanted live Fridays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/yttw and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/calltw. So you think
welcome, everybody, to the Atheist Experience. It is August 21st, 2022. I am J. Mike. Today, alongside me, is the one and only Forrest. How are you doing, Forrest? This is our first show together.
Man. Thanks for having me. Yeah, we've talked plenty of times before, but we've never actually done a show.
Yes, well, I am very much looking forward to it. We'll get ready here in a second to take our first call together. But first, I want to remind people that we are a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 organization dedicated to the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of religion and government. There are many ways that you can support us if you like what we do. You can become a member for as little as 99 cents a month by clicking the join button below the video, and that will give you access to special chat emojis, as well if the pesky slow mode is on, you can get past that as well. And you can also, if you didn't know, you can support us on Patreon at tiny.cc/patreonaxb and become a patron. And you can do that for many of our shows. We have on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Secular Sexuality, as well as Truth Wanted, airing on Fridays at 7 p.m. And we also have our Sunday show, which is Talk Heathen, which you can find before our nonprofit show, which is the flagship show of the Atheist Experience Network, of course. And that airs at 3 p.m. Central. Forrest, do you want to get into our first call? We'll just dive right into it.
I'm ready whenever you are, man.
Let's do it. Let's take Charles in Canada. Pronouns are he, him, and wants to talk about the Bible supporting evolution. How you doing, Charles?
Hey, Charles.
Hey, how are you? Hey, man, how are you?
Doing good.
Yeah, good.
So your claim is that you think that the Bible supports... You think the Bible supports evolution? So could you, could you kind of lay out your claim?
Yeah. So in Genesis, so as we know, it's when everything came to be, evolution, the first creatures began in water, right? They call it the primordial soup or whatever, but it was water nonetheless, right? So the Bible says God creates everything. It says God says, let there be. But then in this verse, it says, and God says, let the waters bring forth the moving creature that hath life. So right there, he's contributing the first moving creatures in the existence of the earth to the water, right? Which is significant in itself, right? Then he goes from the waters. Yeah. So then he goes from the waters. He says, all the great whales, blah, blah, blah. He says, and then let the fowl multiply in the air. So they haven't even gotten to the earth, and he's already talking about the waters being bringing forth creatures abundantly, and then the fowls of the air. Then he goes on to say, let the fowls multiply in the earth, right? Then he gives the day. So that day is over. The time frame is over. The day after that, he says, let the earth bring forth the moving creature, the cattle, creep, the thing, everything after his time. So I think that it's explaining how life came to be and started in the water, went to the sky, came down to the earth, which is why with the early dinosaurs, we see they're actually starting to put feathers on the dinosaurs now, right? Because they think it spawned from birds, right? You follow?
I'm not really following how this is supporting like evolution. I'm not seeing like some prediction that's being made or like talking about anything like specific. Like, you know, like some people will talk about, well, hold on real quick. Some people talk about like the Quran, for example, like they'll, you know, say like expanse or something, and they'll say this is like, you know, evidence of the Big Bang, but I'm kind of detecting a similar issue. It just seems very vague what you're saying. I'm not seeing like any prediction. Like it'd be cool if it was like abundance of light elements or something, which is, you know, going to be predicted in some model, or like with you saying it supports evolution, like at least, I mean, Forrest could probably speak to this better than myself, but I don't really see like what is great about taking something and retrofitting it onto data that the Bible doesn't do any work for. Didn't produce any predictions. You're just kind of like looking and going, oh, see here, this fits with my preconceived belief. Doesn't seem like.
Yeah, I was looking away from the camera for a minute because I wanted to pull up my Bible thing over here. Because like it does say that animals came out of the water in chapter 2, but in chapter 1, it said that he made all the animals out of the ground. So like as easily as you can point to this one part and say that kind of almost sounds like what science says, you can also point to literally the page right before that and have something that's completely ridiculous in the same book. And it's the same, the same book of the same book with two completely different stories, one of which almost sounds right and one very doesn't.
Yeah, I think it would
like... Reiteration though, right? The point is don't you think...
Reiteration if it says two different things.
It's a reiteration.
It's not a reiteration if it says two different things.
Well, so where does it say the other thing? Can you give me the exact location of that?
It was chapter 1, I think 19. I've already closed the thing. Yeah, I think it was 119, I'm pretty sure. If not, I can go grab my Bible, or I actually have the notes in it. I just looked it up online and it took a minute.
Yeah, so let the waters bring forth the moving creature that hath life is in Genesis 1:19, right?
So that's okay, so then it must be I got it backwards.
I think you got it backwards. So don't you find it significant though that the Bible explains long before we had any inclination or any scientific testing or any observations that the Bible claims that life came originated in water? Don't you find that like undeniably significant?
There is a Lakota creation story that sounds an awful lot like accretion of planetary bodies and the production of water from carbonaceous chondrites and evolution. It's all in there. Does that make the Lakota story more true than the Bible? Because it's got a lot more in there that really sounds great.
Story. I'd have to read it and see, but I mean, I find it very significant that God says.
So here I do have some like I pulled the same page up here. Here is a chapter Genesis 1:25. Humans are made after the other animals, which would, I guess, kind of track, not really, but whatever. That would sound almost like evolution. And then the other one here in chapter 2, verses 18 and 19, humans are made, and then the animals are made afterwards. And then God gets to name them or something. So that, again, that doesn't fit. And the other one, neither of them arguably fit. One of them's a little better than the other, I guess. So again, it's two completely contradictory things in the same book. One of them almost sounds like science. Does that mean that we should accept it?
Yeah, you're picking like one thing. I mean, because like in conjunction with calling like a whale, like any taxonomy claims that are there, they're just wrong, right? We don't have that type of taxonomy for some of the creatures that they what is a creeping kind, right? When they talk about kind, like they're so vague. Like what is a creeping kind, right? It's not like they're giving any set like define parameters here or a criterion at which that we could work with. It's just you look at the work that's been done independent of these claims, right? That had nothing. You didn't have to add Yahweh or Jesus or any of that for us to find this. And then you like post hoc go, this looks like it fits this vague notion that, by the way, is telling in many different creation stories. But you wouldn't say like, oh, it's sufficient for all of these claims to be true. Like even if we granted like, okay, they're detailing it, so what? It doesn't mean that it follows that the claim is true, that like Christianity is true, because they could detail phenomena in such mm-hmm. a vague way that it fits like our more like tedious understanding, right? That just doesn't follow. It seems really weak to me, if I'm honest.
Also, I just pulled up the verse that we were talking about earlier. You're right. From the water is from 1:20. And then on 2:19, that's where I got confused. On chapter 2:19, it says that God made all the animals out of the ground. So again, you've got two different verses that say totally different stuff. One of them is almost kind of sounding right, but not really.
Perhaps it's talking in the second one about the land animals, but all that aside, I'm not trying to convince you that there's a God per se. I'm just saying, don't you find that significant that the Bible predicted long before we ever had any...
What prediction about natural selection or evolution, or about alleles changing in a population over time, what prediction is made there? There's nothing. It doesn't talk about alleles changing.
The first,
There's nothing about allele frequency in any population. So what prediction is? Let me ask you. Do you know what a prediction is in science? Because this isn't you're equivocating on prediction.
The water is bringing forth the creatures. Second, the water in the so it says that the fowls of the air. So it went from water to fowls of the air. Right. Logically, why wouldn't you go to earth to fowls of the air? But we look at dinosaurs and we see that they resemble birds more than anything else. Right. So right there, it's telling us that the waters brought forth the creatures. The creatures came to the sky. Then it gives a day and it says, let the birds multiply in the earth. And the earth brought forth. Right. So it's giving a correlation of how things came to be. It's saying that the waters brought forth first. The creatures of the water went to the sky. The sky animals multiplied in the earth, right? And this is what we see with the dinosaurs.
And
right,
and that,
like what I just said a minute ago, there are a lot of other creation stories that sound a lot more accurate or as accurate as that. Not all of them can be true, but they can all be wrong. So, like, why do you take this one
creation
story to be significant?
Hinduism predicted a 4.3-billion-year-old Earth, okay? It's what, 5? It's what, 4.54 if you Google it, I think? That's really good. Do you think Hinduism is true? Right? That's not...
I'm not saying anything else is true. All I'm trying to get you to do is acknowledge that at least that fits the pattern of evolution. I'm not saying Hinduism...
Okay, fair. If you're not making that conclusion, that's fair. My point is that I don't see... Look, that seems really... Like, I don't know. It just seems very post hoc to me. It seems very like I can try to fit this vague description in the same way that someone does with like Expanse, you know, being talked about the universe in the Quran. But like they didn't predict a helium hydrogen ratio, like 3-to-1 ratio. They didn't predict abundance of light elements. They didn't predict when we talk about a prediction and you're saying it like predicts, you use that word predict, you're equivocating because there's nothing like they're not detailing like a mechanism or that there's a allele distribution. They're not doing any of that. Right. So for what you're asking me to do is say, isn't that like pretty significant? No, because there's other creation stories, like Forrest said, that can detail something like that, if not better. And I care about sufficient reason to think that that's, tracking with the phenomena. I don't think that's sufficient. I think that it's likely somebody could have observed around them and detailed a way that they thought it was the case. And when you do it in such a vague fashion, I mean, it's not like when you're thrown at a dartboard, you have all these spaces. I mean, you're removing some of the spaces. You only have like a couple spots to hit when you make it so vague, right? It doesn't seem miraculous to me.
I agree. Anyway. I agree. It's very vague. I agree with you. But I mean, it does fit the pattern. And that's the point, right? As vague as it is.
Hold on. If you're admitting that it's
a lot of really important stuff out. So like that it, yeah, kind of, if you ignore 98% of the pattern, it fits the pattern. But if I say the number is 1, 13, and 70, you cannot then say I now predicted how to count to 1,000 because I got some of it in a pattern. You know what I mean? It doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, and look,
I see what you're saying, that it's vague, and I agree that it's vague. I do agree. I'm not going to deny. That's all I have is those verses for this call. But the point is it does fit. And don't you think it's significant that it predicts the water creates rock?
How are you going to say it's vague? How are you going to say it's vague in one sense and then say, isn't this like really significant? Well, no, it's really vague. Why is it going to be significant?
Point.
No, if it was a precise, precise prediction.
Those aren't the main points.
Yeah, if it was a precise prediction that's made by a hypothesis, that's one thing. That's not what's happening in this case. Look, Charles, we got a lot of callers. We want to make sure we get to all of them. Call back and try to talk to other hosts with this, but I feel like we're just gonna be saying the same things to each other, right?
Yeah, I don't find that significant at all, dude. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, thanks for your time, guys.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. Okay. I mean, don't get me wrong. I just feel like we're just not gonna go anywhere with this.
No, for sure. God bless, guys. Thanks.
Have a good one. All right. So, if you shop on Amazon, you can support the ACA at no cost to you. Simply visit tiny.cc/AmazonSmileACA, and it'll designate any purchase that you make from Amazon. They'll take a portion of that donation and donate it to, portion of that purchase and donate it directly to the ACA. And so go to tiny.cc/AmazonSmileACA. And we also, if this is, I mean, on the other side, it's probably fine, but if this is too much hair for you and you want to tone down the amount of hair on your screen, you can actually check out our podcast on the Atheist Experience Network at tiny.cc/AENpodcast, where you can listen to Talk Heathen, Truth Wanted, Secular Sexuality, Nonprofits, Flagship Show, and the Atheist Experience, of course. So let's move on to, I got a call right here that I really want to take. We got Luck in Canada claims that without God, there is no objective morality.
Wait, Luke.
Luke. Luke. Hey, Luke. Hey, is it Luck or Luke? I'm sorry.
Good. Yeah, Luke, it's okay. I like
the sorry.
Guy who wrote the Gospels.
Right on.
So it's the same name. We have a claim today without God. There is no objective morality. You have a question today about is God good? So that was what I was looking at. And I said, oh, let's talk about that.
Sure, sure.
Good.
So I'm assuming...
Without.
Are you a theist yourself? You believe in a God and you believe that we get morality from that God? Is that what I'm getting?
Yes. Who is speaking? Is it Mike?
I'm Forrest. Hi.
Forrest. Hi. Yeah, nice to hear from you. Sorry, I don't know whose voice is whose. So, all right. So have your name on the...
No worries, Luke. We'll just worry about the content of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So the answer to your question...
Well, I'm asking what's the argument for the claim? Because I don't see that follows, right? Because there's like positions like moral naturalism or like moral non-naturalism, and you can be an atheist. And in fact, many philosophers do. It's like over 50% of academic philosophers who are an atheist do hold that position. I don't hold that position, but they do. So what's the issue with an atheist holding objective morality? Like what's wrong with that?
Well, how can it be objective? How can you claim that it is true whether you want it or not? Like,
well, they're going to claim that it's independent. They're going to claim that it's independent of minds, right? So that's what typically when we talk about objective versus subjective, typically like the way that a lot of people parse this out is mind independent or stance independent. So like my shoe in front of me right now, for example, like it's independent of like my stance or my opinion. Like it's in front of me. It's independent of my mind. And we could look at my shoe and go, okay, yeah, there's this mind independent object, right? That's going to be like an objective fact. And so what somebody who's a moral naturalist would argue for is they're going to say that there are natural facts in the world that ground why we ought to do something. Now, whether I agree to that is a separate notion, but there are positions that's held and they're not dependent on that. But I find it ironic because I take it that your position can't actually have objective morality at all because it's dependent upon a mind, the mind of God or the nature of God. But if we had like an evil God or a different set of properties for God, I mean, would you think that he can just determine what's good just because he just looks at his nature? Because that seems to be pretty subjective to me.
Yeah, so it seems subjective because you are not going, the creator, God is the creator, is the one who created everything. So he created even the shoe that you have in front of you. What makes the shoe in front of you something objective is because it is part of the creation, right? So when you say that God has objective morality, it means that he knows everything that goes into account when he claims that this action is good or this action is bad. It's talking about actions. It's not talking about general rules, well, right?
Let me ask you, Luke.
Many people I talk to that are atheists think of general rules like you shall not kill and lie and those kind of rules. What I'm talking about when I talk about objective morality, it's a specific thing. So what you did yesterday or how you did it yesterday or this kind of thing that you have a kind of a tool that is given by the atheist community to say, okay, I can say that it is good. What I did yesterday was good. And I have reasons to believe that it is good. But is it objectively good what you did yesterday? And that's where I say, no, there is no objectivity.
Yeah.
People will be able to say, well, I disagree with you.
And right. I get where you're coming from. And I think there's a way around it. And because we obviously like where I want to go immediately, like when you talk about this, my initial gut reaction is let's talk about God's morality. And you know, that's one of the reasons we put that question in the chat, is God good? Because I don't think so. I think the God on offer in the Bible is monster. And I don't like that. But we don't actually have to parse that out because we can find objective ways to talk about morality beyond your worldview or mine. So for example, can we agree that like human health and nutrition and well-being and things like that, those are objective scientific facts, right?
Good or facts? I'm sorry.
Facts.
Objective good or facts? Is it good to be objective or?
No, I mean to say, is it a fact that, you know, these types of things are bad for human health and these types of things are good for human health? That can be science. That has nothing to do with morality, right?
I understand. In that sense, good or bad, in the sense that you want to have a perfect health, you have an idea of what a perfect health is. But then again, you will have people say, well, it is perfect to have one less a leg, you know, like amputees.
Well, I'm not. All I'm saying is that we can agree.
It is objectively not true that it is good to have two legs. Right.
Right. Well, what I'm trying to say is, regardless of, you know, Christianity, regardless of atheism, take all this out of there, we can say objectively, and I'm not talking about good or evil or bad or whatever like that, just that we can say that we know, you know, humans are animals, and just like any animal, we can tell what makes them healthy and what makes them mentally and physically sound. People are going to have different preferences. People are going to have different desires. There are some people who genuinely want to have parts of their body removed. That's all whatever. I'm talking about just as a standard template, objectively, we know apples are good to eat and rat poison is not. And we can just say that despite the many, many exceptions to those rules, right? So if we can base objective facts around human health and well-being, why can we not then attach a moral argument to that and say, we know for sure that these things hurt people, either mentally, physically, emotionally, whatever, so those we're just going to call bad. And these things are beneficial to all society, and we're going to call those things good. And now we have an objective way to measure our actions based on science, not based on religion or theology or anything like that, to say this is improving the lives of everybody and this is hurting them, killing them, raping them, torturing, whatever. We're going to call those things bad things. Why is that not an okay thing to do?
Because it's a general rule. It doesn't tell you about what you did yesterday.
It doesn't have to. What, yesterday, I didn't rape or murder anybody, and I did do some things that made people happy. So I can call those good things.
So I'm curious, because I'm curious where you think this morality is coming from. Like, or at least I want to see where you think like the ought lies and like what we should do and where it matters in certain circumstances. Okay. So let's imagine like world A, right? That you like, there's a, like someone throws a baby or something, you know, throws a person off a building, something horrible, right? Something that we would probably both agree shouldn't be done. Right. But let's say, you know, it's an innocent, they just come up to somebody, they just do it, no provoked reason, and God exists in that world, right? That's world A, right? Presumably you think that's wrong, right, in that world, right?
Correct.
Okay, so now let's think of world B. Hold on. Now let's think of world B. Remove the God and we throw the child or the human off the building. Is there anything wrong there, do you think?
Yes, it's still wrong to do.
So there you go. So you just defeated your own point, because you didn't need, listen. You didn't need God to tell me that something was wrong. In fact, we removed God from world B, and you just agreed with me that you care about the victim. I'm happy that you said that, because I get responses from people that say, no, it wouldn't be bad if there's no God in that world, which is like, what? So what you're telling me is you don't care about the victim or the consequences. Like, none of the actual situation matters. It's just like whether or not like some sky dad's watching it happen or like made it happen. Like, I don't, that makes no sense. But you just agreed, you deflated your point, because you just agreed with world B, there's no God in that world, and you agree there's some morality there, and you think it's wrong. Now, whether it's objective, me and you could come to a different argument about, but you don't even need God for you to be moral. I think that's enough, right? That's couldn't you enough. Still your, make your, claims your, about your what you ought do and what you ought not
to
do?
General, you have to pick a specific one, more specific, something about yourself that you did yesterday. This is where we cannot have objective morality. It's not about general rules, babies, hurting babies, killing someone, those kind of rules that we all agree on Earth right now. I hope so. Like, most of us agree that it is bad. So I'm
but is
talking
that,
pre- about
but,
things
that sorry, are listen, is that predicated on a God?
That
is that
are not sure. We are not sure if it's good or bad. So like,
Luke, is that, because when you keep saying that, when you're saying something's wrong, it doesn't sound like the what you ought to not do is coming from a God, because you agree, right, that there's no like actual imperative in world B where there's no God. You just still think it's wrong. You still think there is an imperative. You still think it's wrong. We shouldn't do that, right? So I'm not understanding like what it matters to even argue for some like objective notion when you agree like your standard doesn't even apply what you ought to not do, right? You just agree with that.
Right. Am I off?
Yeah.
Am I off the show?
Yeah, you're back. I'm not understanding, because it seems like,
okay,
like so you want to say atheists can't have objective morality or something, but okay, maybe I don't, I'm a moral anti-realist. So I'm not really convinced that there's moral objectivity in the first place. Right. But I still think we can, like Forrest said, right, we can, if you don't want to be part of the goal of society, or you don't care about well-being, well, then you know what you ought to do. right? But that's not the case for most of us. We live our lives in such a way where we do want to do things in virtue of some goal, and we generally agree upon these goals. So you don't need any objectivity there to know that I shouldn't throw something off of a building. You don't need any of that. All you need is just experiences that come from your actual your life, right? Conferring with other agents in the world, living in a society, seeing if you agree with those laws and seeing like, well, why would that be wrong? You don't need to invoke the God there. So what I'm trying to tell you is that if you agree in world B that there's no objectivity in that it's still wrong to you, why do you need anything else? You think it's a wrong action. Why do you need it? Why would you even care if it's objective or not? You just agree. You don't need God.
Wrong. That's why I care, because wrong.
How do you know you're not now? Like what makes you think that you are moral today?
To know if it's good or bad. So there are cases where the morality is more vague than throwing out someone out of a building. But in those cases, you have some kind of gray area. You're not sure if it was really good or bad what you did. But if there is God, you will be able to have the correct answer, the objective good or bad thing. You will you will never be able to know if it's really good or bad.
You literally just answered.
Let me be more clear with what I'm asking. Is that you? I understand what you mean. I think I do. I think I understand where you're coming from. What I'm asking is, how do you specifically know what's right and wrong? Because you said that it's because God has this objectivity. How is that communicated to you? How do you understand when they're in the moral gray areas, what's a good and a bad thing to do?
God tell us what is, if it was indeed good or bad. He is speaking.
How does he tell you?
Those who pray to him.
How does he tell you? How? How does he tell you?
There are many ways to tell you. Through prayer is one of them. And there are people that are around that you can ask them to ask God, right?
Okay, so let me ask you this then. If you have this open communication line with God and you're able to determine good and bad, what happens if you get a message through prayer, through somebody else, than the Bible, however you get your most reliable messages from God, right? What if you got a message to tell you to do something evil, something that was very clear, throwing the person off the building, that example, right? What if you prayed and like, what's this the right thing to do? And the very obvious message that you got was, you need to squash this baby, you need to throw this person off. Would that then become a good thing to do?
No.
Why? God told you to do it.
It's not one of those cases. Well, the cases I speak of are cases where it's more gray. The case that you presented is not a gray zone. Smashing a baby.
Right. I'm trying to get away from the gray zone for these examples, because I want to make sure that we can't have a discussion of, well, is it really okay to support this company if they have these business practices? A bunch of nonsense. I want to make it very, very, very obvious. So if God gives you a very obviously bad, evil, immoral command to do something that is very wrong, but it comes from God, is that now a good thing to do? Take moral gray area out of it. Just very clear, black and white. If God tells you to murder somebody who is innocent, is that now a good thing to do?
So the answer is I don't know to your question. The reason why I don't know.
Why don't you know?
This I was going to tell you.
So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize.
Yeah. The reason why I don't know is because this situation never happened and is more likely to never happen in the future. This situation where God will ask me
You to do a thought experiment. Like what would happen if?
And yeah, so the answer is I don't know. I don't have any tool to know what would happen in this hypothetical situation that's never happened before.
So I want to press you on that just a little bit more, and then I'm going to give you my answer. But like, I want to press you on that just a little bit. And if you still give the same answer, fine. But like, I know I've never been able to flap my arms and fly before, but I know what I would do if I could do that. I'd be all over the place. It'd be amazing. I don't have to have witnessed that to know how I would respond to it. And I also, you know, my wife has never asked me to rape somebody. She's never made that suggestion. But I know that if she did, I would tell her she was crazy and I would say no, and I would absolutely refuse. So why is that difficult to do with God? If God gave you a command to do something hideous, why is it difficult to now say, I don't care what he says. I know right from wrong for myself. I'm not going to let that happen.
If God asked me to draw a square circle, right? So that would be something that he asked me, and then I drew it. And then people say, well, that's not a square circle. I would be like, what? Okay.
That's an impossibility. Yeah, murder is possible.
You need to know what would happen if God asked you to do something bad. There is nothing to base
you,
my knowledge.
What if I know what
a bird looks like. I know what flapping my arms looks like. I have these kind of examples of what looks like. That's why I can say what I would do if I were able to fly when I flap my arm. I know what it looks like when there is someone being raped. That's why I can say that's what I wouldn't do if my wife asked me to rape someone. I have examples.
Right.
Ask
Luke,
me,
what if I asked you?
If God,
take God out of it. What if I asked you to do something evil? You know what I look like and you know what the ask looks like. If I asked you to go rob a liquor store, would you do it?
No.
Okay, so then just replace Forrest with God. It's a person asking you to do a thing. Would you agree or disagree to their ask? Would you say yes or no?
You are not God, so if it is a person, I would say no, because God would tell me that I shouldn't do it.
Why is there a disconnect here? Why is it difficult to say if God asked me to do something shitty, I would say no? Just because it's never happened before, you can understand it if I give a hypothetical. If anybody else asks you, you can understand the hypothetical. So just go with the hypothetical. Replace me with God, and it's the exact same question. What changes in your mind? Why is that now a difficult thing to answer?
I cannot replace you with God, Forrest. You're not perfect.
All right.
Luke, if God asked you to do something evil, you genuinely can't even imagine what you would say.
Luke, if you can't answer it, we have a lot of Luke, if you can't answer directly, Forrest tried to ask you a bunch of times. We're gonna have to move on to other callers because we have a lot of callers. We want to get to them all, and we were just hoping we're not gonna progress if you're not gonna. If you're just gonna be like, I don't know. Then that's where we're at. I mean, clearly, it seems though to me that like when you talk about a God giving some reason that something's wrong, it's gonna funnel to him. It's gonna be part of his nature or his mind. And if he's telling you you ought to do this thing, right? Then by your standard, you should do that thing because it's a mind-dependent, subjective morality. That's why I said at the beginning, you don't get objective morality unless God has a reason that he thinks homosexuality is wrong or something like that. And he looks in the world, right? Not like my nature tells me that it's wrong, because we can just think of another God where the nature thinks that same thing is good, right? And how do we actually identify or distinguish which one is determining the good objectively? Well, it's really easy. They're both determining it by just looking at their nature or the properties they have, which doesn't make it good. I mean, you should be obligated to say yes in that circumstance if you really think that's the objective morality, and you should say no, right? If you're just agreeing with what you said about the initial thought experiment I gave, which is that you still think it's wrong absent God. So I don't really, I guess I just don't really see the disconnect as Forrest pointed out there. But we appreciate you calling, Luke. We're going to we'll move on to other callers. Try to get
I would like to say before we drop Luke, I do want to point out. Oh, did you already let him go?
I wouldn't try to get all these callers. But go ahead.
Luke, I just want to be very clear. If you're still, I hope you're still listening. I just want to be very clear. If anybody, and I can say that blanket statement because I can do that with my brain, go to hypotheticals, right? If anybody asked me to, you know, rape somebody or murder somebody or do something hideous, I would say no, fuck you. I don't care if it comes from my wife. I don't care if it comes, if I did believe in God, if I got some voice out of the clouds that says you need to go commit genocide, my answer would be no, because I'm a good person and I can be a good person all by myself. I don't need permission from anybody else or instruction from anybody else. I think that you are the same way, even if you don't want to broach that with yourself. I think that you're being, you know, deliberately dishonest in the way that you were thinking about your God. I think that you are a good person. I think you are a good person no matter what you think.
Well, if you guys find these conversations interesting, we have the Atheist Experience private fan group where you can interact with others first off, let me get the link for you, tiny.cc/FBAXPPR. And you can join the private group as well as the Atheist Experience fan group, it's an Atheist versus Theist debates. And you can actually try out some of your arguments on theists or atheists. Maybe you believe in objective morality as an atheist, and someone else believes that they're an anti-realist or whatever position, and you can debate another atheist there, because we don't all agree, despite people thinking that we do. You can go to tiny.cc/AXP fan debates, and get your arguments on. We also have a brand new store. You can visit tiny.cc/merchaca, and you can get your favorite items like t-shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs, and our brand new items like beanies, cell phone cases, and tote bags. And we're now we even now have a special feature, or a feature of a special limited edition item each month. So be sure to check out the store, tiny.cc/merchaca, and all the stores of the other shows. And as always, below the chat, you can see a donate now button. All those donations go straight to the ACA. YouTube does not take out any of the cut, and it is the best way to support us. And finally, I want to give, pull up the beautiful faces up there. Let's give a shout out to the crew cam.
Look at them.
Crew that gives us the possibility of doing the show. And so thank you for those beautiful, beautiful people working behind the scenes. We are going to move on to
number
Antonio.
25 looks really cool.
Yeah. You know what?
We have a crap.
Next time I'm gonna give it to you, Forrest. And you, if you see something in there, if you got it open, you know, just pick it out. But we're gonna go with Antonio, Alabama. No pronouns are given, and wants to talk about how do you deny proof of God when the evidence is the Bible.
Hey,
what's going on, Antonio?
Everything going good. I just heard the conversation that you guys had with the other guy, and I agree with you guys. Yeah. He should have told you guys the truth, and what he should have said was, if God, for one, God wouldn't tell you to do anything wrong. You made a comment that you wouldn't do anything if somebody told you to do it. You would use your own mind. Let me ask you this. If you was in the military, and they told you to go and fight some other people, would you do it?
That's one of the reasons why I would not join the military. No, because I'm not interested.
Okay, so you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it. But the majority of people do it, and they would consider themselves good people, but they go and murder somebody. They don't know what they fight before. They just go off of what somebody else telling them. So you can be a good person and still do something that is deemed bad. But see, that God is, like he said, perfect. If God is sending you to do something, God already knows the outcome. So he already knows if that person is good or bad. See, the world always calling people good, but ain't nobody good. Everybody in the sin, everybody in the fell short. Everybody did something wrong. Let me ask you, have you ever did anything wrong in your life?
Absolutely.
Okay, so how you saying you're a good person then? You did something bad.
Because I try not to do bad things, and I try to be a good person, and when I do bad things, I try to make them right.
And Antonio, I want to try to get to your topic if you want, because you're saying that you think
the Bible. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm very interested on that. Go ahead.
I was listening to y'all since y'all came on, and another guy had made a good point. He said something about a lot of atheist people, they want to throw the Bible out because they use that this is a circular argument thing. It don't make sense for us to throw the Bible out. The Bible is our...
No. Hold on. I get you. I don't want to throw it out. So I just want to preface right then. We don't want to throw it out. I want to use it in conjunction with evidence. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. That's good. Yeah. Okay, let me ask you this. How many bones in a human body?
I don't know.
206. Wow. In an adult.
How many of them grow back? How many grow back?
Not really any of them effectively. There's always going to be ways where you can say, well, unless and until and accept them. But generally speaking, they don't grow back if you lose one.
Yes, the rib grows back. Look it up.
So that's exactly what I was talking about. There are some situations in which ribs, you can kind of start to develop them back, but it's not like a lizard's tail where it just magically starts to come back the way it was.
No, it'll actually grow completely back if they do it a certain way. It'll go all the way back where they can actually keep going.
If certain things happen, certain things can happen, yes. But like generally speaking, if you were to break and destroy a bone, it doesn't heal that way. There are certain new medical techniques and certain ways and certain procedures that we can do stuff like that. But like to say that ribs always grow back, not really, no.
Well, I'm not saying ribs always grow back. I'm saying if you take the rib out a certain way, it grows back unlike any other bone in the body. What was Eve made out of?
Supposedly a rib,
Is that a coincidence? If y'all can actually go and look this up, don't take my word for it. I hope the people that's listening, go look it up. And just think about that. Is that coincidence? I know y'all probably going to say that's coincidence. So let's just move on. Let's move on to another
one. Let's grant.
Well, hold on. You gave me the first one, so let's go from there. Yeah, Eve was made out of a rib in the Bible. That's what it says. Adam was made out of mud. So if we're going to say one of them is clearly connected to reality and therefore it can't be a coincidence, why can't we do that with the other one? Why can't we say, yes, here's the mud people that came up out of mud, and that collects with the Bible too? Why is it just one tiny line of the Bible that we can now draw a connection to?
I appreciate you for bringing that up, because that was my next example. No, the Bible actually says man is created from dust of the ground. If you look at the 14 elements that make up dust, those 14 elements actually make a man. You can go look that up too.
Dust is going to be silicate. It's going to be like, you know, bits of sand and rock and debris. So I don't know if we can say this is the chemical structure of dust. It's kind of a random thing. But I can say, just from memory, that the most common elements in the human body are carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus, sulfur, and calcium. Those seven elements make up over 99% of the human body. I would argue that you're not going to find all of those in that same abundance in dirt or dust. That really wouldn't track. There's going to be a lot of silicon in there that isn't going to be found in the body. There's going to be a lot of other stuff in there, a lot of magnesium and sulfur and stuff there is sulfur in the human body, but like, there's going to be a lot of other things that aren't going to be nearly as well represented in dust in the human body, and vice versa. So I would challenge that point significantly.
Yeah, and on Forrest's point, it seems like and don't take this offensively, but it seems like what you think you're doing is like pulling back an arrow and shooting at a bullseye and like hitting it direct. But it seems like you're really just sticking it in the tree and drawing the bullseye around it. Like, it doesn't seem like that's like really any, like, it's like the first caller we had. I'm not really seeing like if I just grant these things, like, how is this supposed to be significant? And therefore the Christianity is true. I don't get that.
That was going to be my next question as well, is even if I agreed that all these things are true, how does that actually verify anything in the Bible?
You say, it's not verifying anything. It's verifying those two things. And that's what you do. It's like a process of elimination. You use the scientific method to prove something. What you do is you go through all of the different things that you can prove, and you prove them with the scientific method.
Sure. Should we throw out the parts of the Bible that don't make sense in science?
Say it again.
Should we then discard all the parts of the Bible that don't make scientific sense?
Do they not make scientific sense because you don't understand them, or do they not make sense? I'm going to give you another one. The big
Hold on, Antonio.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I was like, let's give an example.
Yeah, these are things that genuinely, objectively do not make sense. Like, for example, a global flood.
Yeah, and so can I make now the conclusion that Christianity is false because they got that one thing wrong?
No, but they didn't get that one thing wrong. If you look at the way the Earth fit together in between the water, it actually fit together like a puzzle. So how do you know it wasn't a global flood at one time? The evidence showed that it was a global flood.
Because the geological strata contradicts that notion.
Yeah, there's mountains of evidence contradicting a global flood, and plate tectonics saying that the crust of the Earth fits together like a puzzle. That's actually yet another reason why a flood wouldn't make any sense.
Right.
So can we disregard that part of the Bible because it doesn't make sense the way that you're trying to use these parts of the Bible that you think connect to reality to verify it or to say that it makes sense? Like, how does that work?
Well, what I was trying to show y'all is, by process of elimination, you can find out if something is true. Like, what y'all say is, how do we know the difference between this God and other gods? What you do is you use a process of elimination. I'm just assuming that you're going to believe in one of the gods. So what you got to do is eliminate.
So how did you eliminate the fact that people coincidentally would get some vague notion right, and then it's actually just true that the world's just all natural, and like, you know, I don't know if you believe in Christianity specifically, but I guess I don't really see like where you go from one, I guess, point A to point B. I just don't get I'm not getting the inference. Be there.
Brought up the example about dust. As soon as he brought up the example about dust, I gave you that. It's like, you just, all I'm saying is, that's how you find out if it's true. Process of elimination.
Yeah, but how did you eliminate the other, like, it seems that that's consistent with other hypotheses we could give. Like, somebody detailed something and like it fits with the story, right? Like, with what is detailed, but I don't know how that gets you to it being reflective of reality, right? I don't think you eliminated everything where now it's just reflective with reality. It doesn't seem like you've eliminated. It seems that you've picked one thing and said, this fits it, but it seems to fit other data, like the God just not existing at all. Like, I don't know why that doesn't fit the data.
Well, I'm not saying it don't fit your data, but if I believe and I find
this
fact, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to lean it towards what I believe. You can lean it towards what you believe, but the thing is, you got to believe in something, though. You see what I'm saying?
That's the problem. Do you understand?
You have to get to the point of believing in something.
All right, so what I really want to make clear is that what you just described so authoritatively, that is the problem. That is exactly the issue that I have with what you're saying, is that we have some information and it could be interpreted this way and it could be interpreted that way. And so you just pick the one that you like the best. And when we're talking about like politics or something, that might be something that you might do. But generally speaking, when we're talking about the nature of reality, I think that's a crummy thing to do. So I'm a biologist. My job is to learn about reality. I can't just say this feels good, so it must be real. I have to find it, the evidence, and only go with what the evidence shows me. I can't try to make it fit what I want. And if it's ambiguous, I can't just make a decision.
This is not something I came up with. This is something the same scientists that you guys quote came up with. See, if your own scientists that didn't believe at one point, or that they objective, they didn't believe, they come up with the same.
What? You're saying that all.
What are you talking about?
What I'm saying is that the things that I told you about the dirt, the dust, and the thing that I told you about was like, I didn't come up with this. This is something that scientists that really were objective came up with.
No, it is something that you've come up with. You've retrofitted stuff that no scientist is like, yeah, this is the first dust that created human. Like, they're not using that in their models at all. You're literally just taking something that's independent of the book, and then you're fitting data into what you already believe. If you were on, look, let me put it this way, at least from my perspective, if you were honest about like being skeptical about claims or wanting to know the truth, you're not going to have any fear from it having it being investigated on its own. So what you could do is go like, okay, let me look at all the data, right? And not bake in certain motivations that I already have there, and actually just see where the evidence takes me, right? But when you bake in this motivation that you already have about like assuming already from the start that like God breathed a man and create a rib woman, when you already start with that, like, of course, that's where you're going to try to funnel your evidence towards. If I have a bad day today and I believe they're bad fairies, bad day fairies, then I could just say, oh, when I had a bad day today, there's evidence of the bad day fairy. And when I have a good day on the next day, there's evidence of the good day fairy, right? But that's like really easy to construct evidence in such a way. You would have to actually like create some predictions, something we don't know, and then show that, right? And then you would lead to like the Christian God or whatever, if you think that it's actually detectable in science, like you're claiming. But otherwise, you're just going to funnel anything you see, any of the data, into this preconceived conclusion that you have. I mean, do you think I'm wrong there? Or like, do you disagree with what I'm saying? Or do you think there's any merit in what I'm saying?
No, I don't think it's merit to what you're saying. It's like investigation with the police. They don't have the end result, but what they do is they take the evidence, forensic evidence, leads them to something.
Do they assume that person is guilty?
A lot of times they have a notion in their mind what it could be. And what they do is they see if the evidence leads them to
they could go like, this suspect is either guilty or we don't have enough evidence to prosecute them or have a reasonable beyond doubt or anything, right? But it doesn't, they're not going, the butler did it, and then looking at all the evidence in that session. They're looking at all the evidence, and the evidence points to the butler did it, right? And you can have evidence that, like I said earlier, you can have two pieces, like evidence, the same data could have two conclusions that both describe that data. But until you keep inquiring, you're going to have, then you have to separate those theories. But
I have a follow-up question as well, Antonio.
Yeah,
you've quoted the Bible a couple of times and then said that there was scientific evidence to back it up. Do you think that there is anything in the Bible that is scientifically unfounded?
No, I think it's things in the Bible that we don't understand, but I don't think it's unfounded. I just think we don't understand.
Okay. So do you think that, for example, that a man can live inside the stomach of a fish for several days?
Yes.
You think that's possible?
Yes, I think that's possible.
Okay. Do you think that stars can fall out of the sky and land on Earth? Because that's in there too.
Yes, I think that's
you understand. You understand, of course, that even small stars are millions of times bigger than the planet Earth. So how on Earth could they fall out of the sky and land on this planet when they are millions of times bigger than the planet itself?
Now, the funny thing about he just did what y'all say I'm doing. How do you know they're a million miles away? Have you been out there to see them? Were you just assuming this?
Oh, see, we have telescopes, dude. We have seen these stars, yes.
You've seen the car?
Yeah, with telescopes.
You have a pretty good understanding on how stars form. Really?
Yeah, we also have spectrometry where we can get the chemical composition of the stars. We have several different ways of measuring their size, usually by using, really cool frameworks and gravitational lensing. Like, Yeah, with really very easily understandable techniques.
There's literally, like, what he mentioned is literally a study of Forrest, tell me if I'm wrong here with my lay understanding, but that is literally, is that not a study of how light interacts with different objects, right? It's like, we literally have a study.
Yeah, spectrometry, yeah. There's a whole field of chemistry that deals with it. So, like, yeah, we can literally verifiably, objectively look at these things and get data on them, yes. And
but
we understand.
What you're telling us is that some book says a thing. That's all we've heard. Right?
Y'all talking over y'all, well, let me talk. Let me just say one thing to that. Okay. What y'all just said.
Yeah, go ahead. We got to close it up after this.
I got you. If y'all don't believe stars fall out of the sky, so that means y'all have never, stars never fell to Earth where y'all could actually observe it. But all of this, this is like a theoretical. What does the word theoretical mean?
It depends on how you're using it.
I got you. We can close it up now. I understand.
Because, like, if you're saying that, like, something's a theory, therefore it's not true, like, the word theory in science means something very different than that.
I got you. I understand. I understand what you're saying. Y'all ain't.
And if you don't, you remember that, like, gravity's a theory. Like, you understand that, right? So anything we talk about, gravity or germs or atoms or cells, that's all theoretical. You understand?
Gravity is on Earth. Like, gravity is on Earth. I can.
Gravity's everywhere in the universe.
Show me the stars. All right,
show gravity, but gravity's a theory.
Yeah, we're gonna move on. Google.
So if we
Google,
say it's theoretical, that doesn't mean it's not true.
Yeah. Google what a scientific theory is versus like a theory or a hunch that people use colloquially, because there's like a massive amount. It's like, there's videos and things. It's like one of the. It's like a meme at this point. It's literally a meme at the point. It's like. Just do some research on that. Call us back, and we can try to go more into the evidence that you have. But we need to move on to other callers. We do appreciate you calling in, Antonio. Do appreciate all the people that call in. Yeah. If you have missed, I don't know, 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, well, you can go back and you can go watch or listen or watch, but you can also check this promotional video about what you missed last week.
Sex in the shower is just like, hey, what if we take one of the most pleasurable acts in the human experience, but one of us will be freezing cold and the other one will be uncomfortable? How about we do that? Any takers?
Yeah. Or there's a hope for me in the afterlife, a reward for being that. Like I don't need that to do what I do. If anything, I think those ideas limit human potential. I don't think we have to be the subjects of a divine creator to have meaningful relationships with people.
There is the Christianity aspect. There's the nationalism aspect, and there's the big ass guns aspect. Although that Christianity bit, they might want to close read it, because I don't think Jesus mentions guns that often.
There are so many famous magicians out there that are also well-known, like, skeptics. And it's like, just because you're a magician doesn't mean that you're a skeptic, and vice versa. Like, I'm a skeptic, but I definitely cannot do magic.
You can't see me from the waist down, but from the waist down, I'm actually a lizard. And I can lay eggs, and I can run faster than a cheetah as a result of my very powerful lizard legs. Would you just accept that? Or would you be skeptical? What do I have? I need something physical to hold in my hand. So, like, this is species one of my lip gloss. And then species one of my lip gloss produces species two of my lip gloss. And species two can produce with species one, but then species three comes up here. Species three can produce with species two, but not species one. These two can reproduce together, but this one can't go all the way back to the first one, which we've already said is basically genetically identical with a slight iteration. That's that is genetics.
So, Forrest, as you know, and everybody watching, it has been a long 2 years since we've been able to congregate together. But based on updates from the CDC and other scientific organizations, we are able to ease back into doing live shows and events. Our first event will be this Saturday, August 27th, which is, if you've watched any ACA show for a while now, you probably have heard, but it is the return of the Bat Cruise. Hosts Matt Dillahunty, Jim Barrows, student Dr. Ben, Johnny P. Angel, Christy Powell, objectively Dan or subjectively Don, depending on how he's feeling that day. They're planning to join a two-hour cruise around Lady Bird Lake that will bring us to the Congress Avenue Bridge at sundown for the emergence of the world's largest urban bat colony. The tickets are $40 each for the two-hour cruise from 7 to 9, and boarding begins at 6:30. Event details and the option to purchase tickets will be on our website at atheist-community.org/bat-cruise. And you can also just go to atheist-.org and just navigate your way around and check out the website. So also the next day, the 28th, if you're in Austin, you should consider making plans to coming down to the studio because we do live broadcast of Talk Heathen at 1 p.m., which will be hosted by Johnny P. Angel and student Dr. Ben, which you can go see on the Bat Cruise the day before, and the Atheist Experience at 4:30 with Matt Dillahunty and Jim Barrows. The doors will open at noon, and the parking is wherever you can find a legal spot. So keep that in mind. Please make sure and double check with wherever you're parking that you are allowed to park there. I've spent $70 a couple times on a boot. It's not fun. It's really not fun. And I could have easily checked signs. So make sure you check that. And if you can't make it, we'll continue to broadcast this from the library. So you will be able to see it the same fashion as well as checking out it on the podcasts if you can't make it live. So we are going to try to get some more calls in.
Yeah, man.
Forrest, do you want to pick one?
I was looking through them. I really like numbers 26, 36, and 7. All three of those looked interesting if you're interested in any of those.
26, 36. All right. Let's go to 36. I think
cool. You
could have a really good conversation here. I think it's pronounced Alchibiadius. Could you give us a pronunciation? That way I don't just completely disrespect the pronunciation of your name.
The name is Alcibiades.
Okay.
Alchibiades.
Please forgive me if I make a mistake.
I'm sorry. If you heard about a guy by the name of Socrates, Alcibiades appears on the Plato Dialogues.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sure. I like philosophy. I'm not as into my like super ancient philosophy, but
It's culture. It's not ancient.
Sure.
It's like wine. I'm calling about gender and biology. And my question to you, Forrest, is what has precedence, biology or gender identification?
That depends. Are we talking about like if someone's just in a normal social circumstance? Are we talking about like if they're hurt and they need medical help? Like, what are we specifically meaning?
A moment ago, you were referring, you know, if I believe I'm a cheetah, I can run like a cheetah. If I believe like I'm a lion, I can go ahead and eat people or whatever.
When did I say that?
About 10 minutes ago.
I don't remember saying anything of the sort, but we'll pretend I did and move on.
Oh, okay. Well, it was actually on the reel that you guys play underneath.
What you mean when Shannon said that she's a lizard and that she can run faster than a cheetah with her lizard legs? Yeah, she was being facetious there. She didn't mean that. I don't know if that wasn't clear.
No, I understand. And I understand that people, you know, with gender identification issues are the same. It's gender identification is like a religion.
No.
We follow science. Yes, we do. We do. We follow science when it's convenient. For example, I did an experiment for 2.5 years. I did not vaccinate it. And I wanted to experiment to see what it was. I'm in Florida, of course. Okay. I maintain contact with everybody that had the problem. And they all lived. They are old people. And they all survived. And up to this day, I'm still alive, I think. So that was science. So natural immunity.
So you called in to say that you jeopardized a bunch of people's lives and you feel proud about it?
Yeah, there's a lot wrong with everything you just said, dude. There's a lot wrong with all of it.
I don't even want to.
No. He asked me a question. Let me ask
you. We're gonna drop you and go.
First of all, just starting right at the top here at the nonsense that you just said.
I'm not gonna.
Even if you as one person did not get vaccinated, herd immunity is still a thing. So hopefully, all the people around you were not jerks and decided to go ahead and get vaccinated because vaccines don't just protect you; they protect those around you. So the people around you protected you. You can thank them later. So just because you wanted to run an experiment on yourself, that's not how experimentation works. All you did, as J. Mike said, was jeopardize the health of everybody else around you, that you didn't prove anything there, and that's not following science when it's convenient. We just understand how vaccines work. The other thing you talked about how gender identity is like a religion. And this is another thing. This is actually when you started saying that we follow science when we wonder. Gender is not a biological construct. It is a social construct. Sex is a biological construct. Gender is social. Gender changes from society to society, from generation to generation, from person to person, from day to day. It is a fluid term. It's not that freaking hard to figure that out. So if someone else identifies as something else, that is not them just wanting to be something new. That's not them just feeling like they might want to try on the identity of a woman today. It is nothing of the sort. And to reduce it down the way you said is extremely hateful and hurtful to people in those communities who are actually dealing with those things. They're not suffering from having a different gender. They just are a different gender. Again, not that hard and not anti-scientific in the very least. So just swing and a swing and a swing and a miss there, dude. Wow. You waited a long time to say all that. And oh, God.
Well,
I'm sorry I suggested that one.
No,
I could pick the next one.
We're good. No, well, I want to say I love co-hosting with you because just the exclamation point is just always great. We'll try the other one that you had for us. Maybe we'll go a little better. We'll go to Henry.
I think we understand why now he didn't have any pronouns listed as well.
Yeah, maybe hopefully in this case we get a little bit more of a tolerant view in the sense. But we have Henry with no pronouns given, from Estonia. Wants to talk about religion and mental health, saying that religion has significant mental health benefits.
Hello.
Try part two for us. You go ahead.
Hello. Hello. Yeah. So I just wanted to mention that. Yeah. Hello. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
So people who are religious have better mental health and adapt more quickly to health problems compared to those who are less religious and spiritual.
Okay.
According to
so, can you think about why? Because, like, yes, we can quote those numbers, and I believe that I'm pretty sure what you're saying is correct. But just having that data doesn't tell us anything. Like, we can't derive an ought from an is, right? We can't say more people with religion are happier, therefore we should all have religion. So, why do you think it is that they're happier? Because the literature that I've read on that is pretty clear that when you don't have religion, you don't have that perceived safety net. In your head, you take things a lot more seriously because you realize this is the only life that you have. You don't feel like anyone's there to protect you or watch over you or forgive you or anything like that. You have a lot more responsibility on your shoulders. So yeah, people with religion are a lot happier because they are convinced that everything's going to be fine no matter what.
Yeah, well, it's major stress relief. And when you have less stress, then different parts of your brain work together in harmony.
Because, sure. But like I said, does that make it a good thing or does it make religion true?
Well, if it gives you an evolutionary advantage if you end up making better decisions if your nervous system is working optimally.
Okay. So there, I would disagree with you. I get where you're coming from. That's not a bad, like, I get what you're trying to say. The difference that I would have an opinion with you is that I think it's better to be aware of what's really going on around you and then make intelligent decisions based on that. I think one of the reasons why we see, you know, higher rates of depression or anxiety or whatever in non-religious people is because we live in a religious society. So there's a good chance that somebody's an atheist. They weren't always an atheist. And they are now, as an adult, deconverting, deconstructing, and having to build up good coping mechanisms and good mental health regulations and, like, learn how to deal with the difficult project of being a human all of the sudden because they were robbed of that opportunity growing up. So, like, there are plenty of atheists with really good mental health and really good emotional stability. And there are plenty of religious people that have really bad mental health and bad mental stability. You can have these in both camps. But to try to say that religion is giving you an advantage because it's making you more calm and more happy, I don't think that sheep are more happy because they don't know what a slaughterhouse is yet. You know what I mean?
No, that's like some sort of weird analogy. But... because religion is so widespread, this is evidence that it must give an evolutionary advantage to people who are religious. So otherwise, if it didn't, then there would be more people who aren't religious.
I disagree with you again. It's not that there's an... Okay, let me ask you a question. Do you think that more people are religious than not religious because it gives you an advantage in life or because they were indoctrinated at a very young age and religions have swept across the world, forcing people to convert, slaughtering people who didn't convert, making it illegal to not be religious in lots of societies? Do you think that that has more to do with people being religious or just that they had a good feeling and it was an advantage?
No, I think both are correct.
Right. So I would argue that only one of them is that, yeah, maybe religion does make you happier, but the reason why so many people are religious today, like, if you want to say the happiness thing is a little piece of it, sure, but I'd say 99.999% of the reason why people are religious today is because we are in a society globally that teaches you that religion is a good thing and it needs to be respected, and that you can only be a good person if you're religious, and that only good people are religious, and that all, and like, if you're religious, you're more connected to the universe and you're more of a whole rounded person. And they prescribe all of these benefits to religion that it doesn't deserve. And we live in a society like that. That's why people are religious today. Their parents told them a thing because they were told a thing because they were told a thing because they were told a thing because our society is built around.
Well, the scientific consensus is that religion is good for your mental health and health in general. Until fairly recently, I was convinced that religious people are either trolls or lunatics. But then I saw Nassim Taleb's take on religion. So he had a very interesting perspective that I had not heard before. And very recently, I thought maybe if religion is a very old thing, and so I looked up, I did my research on religion and mental health, and I found out that it has been thoroughly studied by scientists. There have been thousands of studies made, and also meta-analyses. So these are studies of the studies, and the consensus is that it has significant mental health benefits, and that's very interesting for me
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. Like, I agree with what you're saying, that religion has been tied to some mental health benefits. Or rather, I would hesitate to say it that way, because when you phrase it that way, it sounds like it's a pill that you take. You know what I mean? That if I want to be happy, all I need is religion. And that if I have religion, I will be happy. When really what we're seeing is just correlation. And correlation doesn't necessarily mean causation. And so, yes, there is a correlation between religion and being overall happier. But again, there's a lot that you're sacrificing to get there. And by that, I mean things like, you know, rationality and like a healthy understanding of the world, empathy, all of the things that go along that you have to necessarily get rid of in order to say, like we talked about in the prompt in the chat, that God is good, right? If you're going to have this religion that says that God is good all the time, then you must assume that the 24,000 children that starved to death every day deserved it, and that that was the best thing that could have happened to them. You're sacrificing that bit of humanity in order to have the peace of mind that nothing's wrong with the world. Somebody's in control. And when we look at this in psychological terms, we see this concept of what we call terror management. And terror management is simply, to summarize it, very, very overly simplifying it, is the idea that it's a lot more pleasant to think that God is in control, or even that something horrible, the secret society of lizard people, is in control. That's a lot nicer to think about than to think nothing's in control, everything is chaos, I could die at any time. That's very scary. But it's easier just to say, it's cool. Whatever bad thing happened was actually a good thing, and God wanted it to happen, and he's watching over me, and it's beautiful. Yes, you would be happier if you believe those things, but you would also be a severely emotionally and rationally stunted person because of it. So just because atheists tend to have more issues of like dealing with reality, that's not our fault. That's because we were robbed of those coping mechanisms as children. But also, I would much rather have the depression and anxiety that I have today than just turn a blind eye to everything wrong with the world because I assume it's supposed to be. Does that make sense?
Well, I understand your position, but I do disagree with you regarding the believing nonsense. If believing nonsense gives you an evolutionary advantage, then it makes sense to believe nonsense. So that's my position.
I get that. And another thing that I have an issue with it, and I'm sorry, I know I've been talking for a long time. I'll let you respond. But like one more thing that I really have a problem with what you're saying is that you keep using the word evolutionary advantage. Evolution is going to take a lot longer than the history of religions has to offer. So like in a society, being happier doesn't mean you're going to have more children. There's no correlation there. That's not an evolutionary thing. It might give you societal advantage, a cultural advantage, but like I would argue a lot with your your assertion that it's evolutionary as well.
Yeah, I wanted to ask that myself, because like presumably, like when I talk to people that go through it, you know, it's obvious, or go through deconstructing their beliefs, it's obvious, like really hard on a lot of them. It's like they're clearly in a state where they're not as happy as they probably were prior, because they had this sense of security. They had a community, they had all these kind of things that went with it that they're now sacrificing in that sense. But like, I guess I'm not seeing, like, why couldn't I make a claim that, like, going, having had that, you know, thought that God exists and that gives you that comfort, but then going through a deconversion process, like, why couldn't I say that that's actually a better evolutionary process? Because you actually would be able to, like, decipher things and believe when
something's happening. You build better critical thinking skills.
Yeah, think better critically. Yeah, because it just seems, yeah, the evolutionary benefit things seem like it was throwing it off to me, because it seems like I could kind of just make that claim too, but seems like mine would have more substance behind it than, like, you're just happier. Because I don't see, like, correlation of happiness to, yeah, like a, you know, allele frequency, like, increase in a population or whatever.
Well, it's not just happiness. Well, basically, there is a beast living inside you who takes care of your temperature, your other bodily functions, and certain behaviors like fight and flight, as you know, of course know that. Right. And religion is a and this beast is living its own life. I mean, you might disagree with me, but that's how I interpret things. And what I think religion...
I figured you're just being poetic. I was rocking with it.
Yeah, no, I at the end of the day, there was a PhD talking about the autonomous nervous system last summer that I attended. And he used this kind of analogy. He was talking about autonomous, parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, and how in different modes they influence behavior, and how what stress is involved there. And... So in my view, what religion is doing, not just being happier, it's different practices like praying or yoga, or what Muslims are doing, praying, basically doing yoga, and also singing. These all, and the community interaction, these are all exercises to keep the nervous system fit. And if your nervous system is fit and you have less stress, then you end up making better decisions, because different parts of your brain are not in conflict. They're working in harmony to achieve the same goals.
Okay, so that's a really good and interesting thing to talk about. And the issue that I would have with that, because I get where you're going with it. I appreciate that you went there. The question that I would have is that there are other things that do that. Like, there are other ways. You brought up, you know, community and singing and praying and meditation and yoga and all these things that really help build mental health and also a sense of community and like big togetherness, and helps you feel more connected to the people around you. There are appreciable benefits to all of those things. I agree. The question that I have is anything else offering those benefits that doesn't also bring all of the terrible baggage of religion? Because while we can say here's all these things that make people, you know, I know we're talking about more than just happiness, but I'm going to boil all of this down to say happy, just to be succinct, right? But that there are all these benefits that make people happy when they're religious. There's also mountains and mountains of people who talk about the trauma that they incur from religion. The amount of people who were oppressed and repressed and hurt emotionally because of religion. The amount, especially women, who were taught that they were, you know, disgusting and perverted and awful and sexual before they were able to walk because of religion, right? So there's a lot of hideous things that come out of religion. And yes, we can agree that there are some very pretty things. But what I'm saying is there's lots of other ways to get those same very pretty things that don't come with the horrible things. So I don't think religion has a leg to stand on in terms of being worth it. You know, the cost-benefit analysis is just not in its favor.
I disagree. As I already said, because religion is so widespread, this is evidence that the cost-benefit is there for religion. And you talked about the other things that like yoga and other exercises. And of course, these are good for to do the same things, but for some reason... Because religion is so widespread, these other things aren't as widespread. For example, there is the Silva method of mind control of different exercises. You're doing visualizations and different kind of self-programming and hypnosis. But it's not as widespread for some reason, but religion is. And I think the reason why religion is so widespread and these other methods are not might come to God. I think if you believe in God, believe if you're and you believe you if you're not following the gods rules, I mean these ceremonies and exercises, then God's wrath will fall upon you. So I
right, but we already approached that a minute ago. It's I don't think that religion is widespread because it's true or because it's useful. I think the religion is widespread because for the past few thousand years, the religious people have been butchering their way across the entire globe and forcing people to convert. And now, even a couple hundred years after most of that has stopped, not all of it, but most of it, we still have several countries where it is illegal to be an atheist on penalty of death. We still have several countries like America, where I live, where we have visible scars from the wars fought and the genocide committed because people weren't of the right religion. Like here in America, we had, just as an example, we had forced boarding schools for the indigenous people where they were literally kidnapped from their families, or their families were forced to sign away the rights of their children, and their children were abused in schools until they forgot their culture and forgot their religion and were indoctrinated, trained to be Christian. That's why Christianity is so prevalent here, because everybody who was already here when we came along was butchered, murdered, and forced to convert. The slaves that we brought over were taught, here's the Christian Bible, it says you must obey your master. That's why we are a Christian majority country over here. Not because Christianity is true or useful or anything like that. It's got a long, bloody history of forcing people to believe this. That's why it's around. So again, yeah, you can point to some really cool benefits. I can point some really cool benefits of any awful thing, but we can also do away with the awful things and still get the benefits.
Okay, so you talk about war and religion and the reason that religion is still around because they killed a bunch of people in America, right? So, but that's an evolutionary advantage if they were able to kill those people and take their resources. And regarding war, what I want to talk about.
I think you're equivocating on evolutionary advantage when you use that word.
Yeah, and also just because they had an advantage because they were able to slaughter all of those people. The advantage was they came from Europe and had guns, because while the whole time this half of the world was figuring out like really cool agriculture and community stuff, the half of the world that my family came from was figuring out how the most creative way to torture a person to death was. So yeah, Europeans came over here with superior firepower and murdered a lot of people. Calling that an advantage is kind of a crappy thing to do, and saying that it means that they have something going for their side in religious terms is awful.
So it might not be a nice thing to say, but the reason they had the guns is because there were a lot of countries in Europe who were constantly at war with each other. So they had to develop the...
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Beat the other guy.
Yeah, that's what I was just talking about. The issue isn't that it's unpleasant. The issue is that you said a minute ago that if you're religious, that God's on your side. And now you're pairing that with what you just said about how they had this evolutionary advantage because they had superior firepower. Correct me if I'm wrong. I am extrapolating from what you're saying here, but it sounds an awful lot like you're saying that the colonizers that came over here and committed genocide were justified because they had this religious advantage and that made them right.
Well, but that's history. That's history. So I'm not
were they right?
Good or bad, but I'm just saying that they had an advantage.
Yeah, okay.
But I just wanted to mention quickly about war, that war isn't over religion. War is over resources.
So, well, Henry, after this, we got to get wrapping up, because I want to try to at least get one more caller in before we go for the day. So if you could,
okay,
we try to give you a chance
war
to close
up. War is absolutely about religion. Not all the time, but it has been. There have absolutely been wars about religion.
There have been some, but mostly wars over resources. For First World War, the biggest wars weren't over religion, it was over resources. The Iraq war, it was over resources. It was over petrodollar. So which war do you exactly want to mention that was over religion? The war, Inquisition.
The Crusades.
Inquisition. It was over trade routes.
Why the Pope told every person going out to fight that if they slaughtered as many heathen as possible, they'd be absolved of all their sins and immediately get a ticket to heaven? Because that sounds like a religious war to me. Even if the politics were doing it over this, that, or the other, the people fighting were doing it for religious reasons. They were slaughtering children because their religion told them to. Maybe they were happy when they were doing it, though.
Okay, well, what's the difference between that jihad and weapons of mass destruction in Iraq?
Henry, we're gonna move on.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the masses.
Henry,
I'm not arguing whether or not it is. I'm saying that just saying that they had some advantage because they were religious, it sounds like the connection you're drawing here is that they were justified because they had this advantage.
No, I'm not saying justified. I'm just saying they had an advantage.
Right. That sucks, dude. So, like, okay. We can do just fine without it because I don't call that an advantage.
Okay. Yeah, okay. You can go to
there. I think you need to look at what an evolutionary advantage, because you keep using that term and it's like not...
Well, even a societal advantage, I don't consider it an advantage to say these people were able to murder a lot of folks, therefore they had the advantage. Like, being successful in something heinous isn't... It's not like I'm saying the axe murderer had a great advantage because he had a really strong arm and a really sharp axe, so we should all have sharp axes. Like, no, he's still a fucking crazy axe murderer. We shouldn't emulate or look up to that or call that a good thing. We should say... We should take that horrible axe away from that monster. So if we have people who are willing to do these awful things based on religion, we should do away with this evil religion that's training them to do these awful things. It's not an advantage. It's a weapon. It's poison.
Yeah, Henry, we got to move on to other calls. We appreciate it. I'm trying to get one in if we can before we end for the night. But we do appreciate
it. I do appreciate you having such a civil discussion with me, Henry. Thank you. And I'm sorry we have to move on.
Yeah, I want to say that for like a lot of the callers today have been really, really civil in some cases. And so we really do appreciate that. It makes you can progress a lot further in a dialogue that way. And so we want to give our theist or atheist callers respect for that. But we will try to move on real quick to this. He's been waiting in the call log for a while now. So we're going to go to Tyler in Indiana. I think we could kind of discuss me and Forrest's views pretty quickly here. So you want to know, is it likely that Jesus existed?
Yes, absolutely. So basically, I've heard a lot of Christians claim that, everybody knows that there was a historical Jesus. Even atheists know that. And I've looked online, and I haven't been able to find anything like that. Like, I'm wondering if there's any anthropological or historical account that there was a Jesus. And where I could find that kind of information, because that would be...
There's no contemporary first century evidence. So when people say that, like, I'm not a mythicist, so like, I fine with saying Jesus existed.
Right.
I don't like worry about that point.
Uh-huh.
I don't think the evidence is like great because we don't have any first century. I think our first mention might be Pliny the Younger, who's like writing to an emperor about how to like deal with Christians, right? But none of what people often cite, like Tacitus or Josephus or any of these, like,
that's what I was gonna bring up.
They're not contemporary accounts.
Okay.
Also, in terms of Josephus, I'm pretty sure that one was found to be like a plagiarism later on. Like somebody credited it to him, even though it wasn't really him. Yeah.
Yeah. And
forgery, not plagiarism. Thank you. Yeah.
So I would say, like, from my perspective, like, I think it's kind of a waste of time to worry about that because you have, like, you have a claim about a guy who has a lot of other things baked in there that you can easily attack, right? I will say this real quick is that when we talk about a historical Jesus, the way that I parse this out is like, I'm a mythicist in one sense, I guess, where what's detailed in the Bible, or how people interpret that the changing manuscripts over time, I don't take that to be anywhere close to the historical Jesus, because just think of like the Sermon on the Mount. Do you think that those are all, you know, Jesus's words 40, 50 years after the fact, when like none of us could tell, we couldn't write down if we saw a speech last night, we couldn't sit there and write like one sentence, and remember it. So that historical Jesus doesn't exist. And I'm very confident about that. But some guy Jesus and who the Gospels refer to and how many times you can interpret that, sure, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I've heard people that I respect say that Jesus did probably exist. I've also heard people say that he probably didn't. Quite frankly, it doesn't matter at all, because at the end of the day, that's all it is. He's just some dude. Every single level of the Jesus claim would have to be verified. Saying that he exists doesn't prove that he was a god, or that a son of God, or that he did a miracle, or that he said anything particularly interesting. Like, I could prove to you for sure that Abraham Lincoln existed, but if I said that he could fucking fly, you'd probably think that I was crazy. So, but he definitely existed, right? So it's just, that's whether or not he existed is really immaterial to everything else to do with Christianity.
And Tyler, real quick.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can agree. Yes.
I wanted to say that from my perspective, right, the way that I've looked, and I'm not a New Testament scholar or anything, so this is, you know, according to me, based off of things I've looked at, my understanding of Christianity, or what Jesus was preaching, like as an apocalyptic preacher, was that he thought that the kingdom of heaven was going to come down on earth during the disciples' lifetime, and not like a linear type of like heaven, earth, hell type situation, but that it was going to be established on earth, right? Like the new age, the new kingdom. established on earth. Yeah. And when people, I talk to Christians about Jesus, they're talking about a completely historical or different Jesus than the one that I also don't, because the earliest manuscripts are just, from my opinion, completely bastardized to what actual Christians are taking mm-hmm. Jesus to be and what he preached. So there's like a really weird divide on talking about a historical Jesus, because we're all talking past each other. We're talking about somebody that preached different things, that has different miracle claims, right? Different desires and motives. Like it's a completely different person when you parse it out. So that's where I'm like a mythicist in most senses of it, but it does seem like, you know, I'm fine with granting an amalgamation or some type of notion there that could have, you know, been the central figure. But sorry, go on, Tyler. I want to give you a chance to speak.
Oh, you're fine. So I assume that it's kind of the same thing with like the Buddha then as well. Do we know if he existed or... Again, it doesn't matter really that much, but the Buddha, if the Buddha existed, was...
I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
I have zero interest. I don't know.
I have one more quick question, if that's okay.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, by all means.
My question would... Okay, awesome. So let's say that we die and there is some kind of afterlife. How would we even know if that's real or not? Like, you know what I mean? Like, because time would be so warped... Like, we could just be having a DMT trip. Like, how would we even be able to confirm whether or not the afterlife that we're perceiving we're having is real? You know what I mean? So, kind of want to hear.
I suppose it would be no different than, can you perceive whether the life you're having right now is real? You know, you could very easily be plugged into the Matrix. You could be, you could be playing a VR game that you forgot you were playing. You could be a brain in a jar being fed, like all that. And this, a lot of times people bring up like simulation theory and all this stuff, and they're like, oh, well, this person said it's possible, so therefore, the fact is, these are what, you know, these are unfalsifiable claims. I can't prove whether or not I'm in a simulation or a dream or a DMT trip or whatever. I could have died last week and I'm still freaking out. Like, who knows, right? But the fact is, this is the reality that I can deal with. And even if I can find proof positive that those things aren't true, you can then just say, that's part of the thing that you're in, that have this example. Or if I were to wake up like Neo and then be in the new world, you can then say, this is level 2 of the game now. And that's all it is. And like, so there's absolutely no way that I can affirm or deny or destroy any of that. So I'm just going to deal with the life that I know that I have. And if I find out there's an afterlife later and there's a God later on, the first question I would ask him is, who the fuck do you think you are? And that would be that whole conversation.
We'll have to coin forest ideas like the solipsistic onion. It just has layers of like meat.
Exactly.
Then you go to another layer of brain in a vat, another Cartesian skeptical scenario there. It's just, it just has layers. But
it turns out they're all true, and it's just stacked on top of each other. You're a brain in a vat, but only in the simulation that you're playing.
Exactly. I think there's actually an interesting point there. I mean, I know this isn't directly your question, but it's something I wanted to express, at least how I deal with these types of things, is that I look at it a comparison of theories. So when we compare that type of theory of like, you know, am I living the life I am, or is this the real afterlife, or whatever it would be in that situation, when you compare the theories, like, this is the external world that I have, plus this is the external world and I'm a brain in a vat that's producing it, like, you've added this extra entity for which you have really no, like, sure, it fits the data equally in some way, but like, there's nothing there like to add the extra entity, so you might as well shave it off, right? You know, like, it's like with my ex, like, anything we talk about evolution and is, you know, God designed it or code, it's like, look, if you can explain all the phenomena without having to add these entities, just shave it off. It's not doing anything for your theory, didn't produce novel predictions, did nothing, so there's no reason to have it. And in this case, I think it's the same. But to directly answer you, I think it's the same thing as Forrest. I don't think a demon could have created me 5 minutes ago with my perception I had a 13th birthday. I can't rule that out. That's why I'm a skeptic. That's why I don't accept claims like that, because they seem to be pretty identically unfalsifiable, you know?
I marry your opinions, definitely. So I just wanted to, you know, continue to further my understanding of those topics.
Yeah.
Learn more stuff. So I appreciate it. Absolutely.
Oh, we appreciate you calling in and waiting. So you were on hold for a long time. We appreciate you being so patient.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys.
Take care, man.
Thank you. And thank you for
all the like 12 other callers that we weren't able to get to.
I wanted to apologize. Sorry for the ones we couldn't get to. Please call back next week or call on any of the shows. Talk Heathen, Truth Wanted, Secular Sexuality, depending on the topic of your show. You can call those shows, or you can wait till next week where we'll have the live show after the Bat Cruise. So make sure you go to the atheist-community.org, navigate around there, and check out what is happening and going on in the realm of the atheist community of Austin. Forrest, is there anything going on for you? Do we need to plug anything you got going on or anything you want to share?
In the next month, in September, starting, I'm releasing a new series about how evolution works. So be on the lookout for that if you're into that.
Sweet. Awesome. And
on our YouTube channel.
And we should give a big shout out to the Crew Cam once again for putting on. Mm-hmm. Well, I would say they put on an amazing show. I mean, we might, I might mess that up or something. So, but that they always put on a great show. So I just look cool next to the producers and Forrest, and I just like automatically am a little bit cooler. So it works for me. I benefit. But anyway, guys, thank you so much. We appreciate you. We love you. And hopefully we will see you next week, Bat Cruise 27th or on the 28th, live in the library. Take care.
Bye. Right away.
It's time to get sexy, so watch Secular Sexuality Live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTSS and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.